That was an artificial. That was my Diet Coke. Welcome to When the Kids Go Down. I'm Ari Thomas. Thank you so much to those of you who reached out and support me. That was really nice of you. So this last episode was just like, an introduction, a little bit as to who I am and what this podcast is about. Also, I'm recording at night right now, which is not my best mental space for clarity. I'm not a it means I parented all day, and so this is quite literally when the kids go down. And this Diet Coke is what's helping me work right now, because otherwise I'm not sleepy. I would just like be no good. Also, I do have an answer to why I said crafting fuck it. It's because I was looking around my house to look at like interest around as points of like topics of what we would talk about. And I had a bunch of cut up paper because I love to make little paper, what are they called? They hang from your ceiling. Oh my God, it's my stomach. Chains, paper chains. And I don't know, I think that's part of like amazing making your home cozy for like, on a budget or like cheap. Lots of little like things you can do, like sticks and little acorns that you can collect, and just things that me and my son did last winter that made our home like a little cozy for free or for very, very cheap, because I would get some construction paper and it just looks so cute when you decorate and make these little paper chains. And then you can go on like Etsy and find cute pattern paper to make. It's just really, really cute. Or you can find like old magazines and cut those up and keep whatever, like if you find like a really, it's like quilting but with paper. It's really cool, which is why I said crafting fuck it, because it was something, and the fuck it part, I don't know. I don't know. That just came out of me. But right. Anyways, thank you to everyone who was so nice to me, because I need it, because I have low self-esteem. I'm just kidding. I really don't. But that reminds me, there's one time where I went with a friend to, like, we went to a grocery store for lunch in high school. We were kind of just like, we had free range to walk around. And so we walked around to the nearest grocery store and we ate samples for lunch. And this lady had samples of orange juice. And my friend, she was like telling us, this one has extra added vitamins and this one has like strawberry with it or something. And my friend was like, oh, can I try the extra vitamin one? That'd actually be really good for me because I have low self-esteem. She meant to say that she had a low immune system. The way that the sample lady just kind of like stared at her, and it took my friend a minute because her brain was not so big, and so that was really hilarious. We don't talk anymore. Nothing happened. I just think we grew apart. Also, she went like very Mother Teresa on us as little 14-year-olds, so that was a little weird. But also we just grew apart because it was high school and high school is different. Anyway, since we have last spoken, it's just been a little bit of a mess. The kids have gotten kind of sick. They have boogies, and Beck, my littlest one, he is 9 months old in a week, I believe. A week on the 10th of December, he'll be 9 months old, which is also my anniversary with my husband. But he's not really ever been like truly sick, or very stuffy or very mucousy. I think we had like a day where he had a little bit of boogies and then it just like went away. He didn't even have to like mess with it at sleep thing time. And now he has no idea what to do with himself because he's not feeling well. And so he's just miserable and wants me all day. And he's never been sick, so he just like doesn't understand. And he's not very sick, he just has boogers, but he just doesn't understand like what's going on. And he's very, very attached. And Mika's also been like, he's actually been really understanding of what's going on with his body. And he's been really cooperative with taking medicine. I was so happy last night whenever it was time to give him medicine, and I brought out the spoon, and at first he like screamed really high pitched, and I was like, oh, it'll make us feel better. It's just medicine, We drink it, and then we don't have to drink it again until a few hours later. And then we do it again, and then we feel better. And he was like, okay. And he drank it, and now he's been asking for more anytime he has like the slightest booger. And I was so happy. Like, I was like, so giddy, and he's all, "Mama, what you feel?" And I said, "I feel happy." And he goes, "Yeah." So it was really, really cute because I was just so excited because he just like drank the medicine and I didn't have to like pin him down, which I don't. I did that once, but that's really all that's been going on. I've been trying to clean with two babies attached to me. I asked Mika today, I was like, "Do you remember when it was just me and you?" And he was like, "Yes, I do." And I said, "I loved that time. It was so, so special to me. Obviously, I love Beck and I love you like having a brother, but I loved that time so much and it means so much to me." And he's like, "Me too, mama." And then he just runs away. He's like, not care. But I just, sometimes I just feel so guilty that my time is now divided. And I even feel guilty for Beck. I was like, "Oh my God, you have no idea what it's like to just be me and you." And that makes me sad. But there'll be plenty of like future times for just a solo date with one of them. But yeah, I don't know. I knew I was gonna feel guilty. That's like I just cried so much right before I had Mika because I was like, I can't bring another kid into this world. I can't take my love away from Mika. And your heart truly does grow and it does not end up being where you're taking love away from another child. It just grows. But it does not feel that way. When you don't have another one, you have no idea what to base it off of other than people like me telling you right now that's what it does. And so it's just very, very hard. And then sometimes like this, when they're both sick and I want to give both of them 100% of my attention at the same time, it just makes me a little sad. But it has there's no real reason for that other than like I want to be times two of me, just how I feel. Okay, so we're talking movies in this episode. Specifically a few movies that I watched a million times and have shaped much of my brain and personality. Specifically scary movies. I am just a scary movie gal. I don't know. It's what I'm drawn to. And I did have other ones that weren't scary movies. This is like based off of a post I made on TikTok that I could talk about for ever. And so I thought I'll just make an episode about it because I only got to write like a few sentences in each of the little photos. And so I was like, I'm just going to make it more long form. And a few of them weren't scary movies. They were just like movies that I felt like really were I watched at a very like specific time in my life where it transformed my brain. But most of them are scary. And so I thought I would just like stick to a scary theme and then maybe like obviously like I love movies. And so I can do this many more times. And so I'll just do like different type of genres or kind of like categorize them, and then we can run off this subject into many episodes into the future. I also have an idea to. Oh, wait, it just left my mind. Are you kidding me? Never mind. I guess I don't have any thoughts ever. Should I just ignore it and then continue? I think I should, because if I dwell too long, then I'm gonna forget everything else. So these are five of. No, I don't even know if there's five, but there's probably four. These are just like scary movies that are important to me. And I want to talk about them. So the first one is a Pan's Labyrinth. I need to make sure I'm actually still recording. Okay, I am. So I asked a ChatGPT to summarize these. I asked a very specific question so that I can get a summary with no spoilers. What did I ask? I might leave that in. Okay. Can you summarize Pan's Labyrinth without giving spoilers, but mention key points and symbolism? Okay. So this is what chat had to say. Pan's Labyrinth is a dark fantasy film by Guillermo del Toro that intertwines a rich imaginative world with the harsh realities of post-Civil War Spain in 1944. The story centers on a young girl, Ophelia, who discovers a mysterious labyrinth and encounters mythical creatures that guide her on a series of quests, love quest. Her journeys explore themes of innocence, disobedience, and the conflict between escapism and confronting harsh truths. Okay, so ethical dilemmas. With its magical realm symbolizing hope, resistance, and the power of imagination in the face of cruelty and oppression. The labyrinth itself serves as a metaphor for choices, transformation, and the blurred lines between reality and fantasy. Are those lines blurred? It's masterfully balanced its fantastical elements with a deeply human narrative, using rich visual storytelling and symbolism to explore the nature of morality, sacrifice, and the resilience of the human spirit. Okay, the reason I said the my question is because I feel like that is a very I feel like you can tell when Chat GPT was written or is copied because it's like too specific. Like I asked for symbolism and it's like it's symbolized in. It sounds like some kid who's trying to make a word count for their essay, and so they use words like the symbolism could be found in chapters one. You know what I'm saying? So ChatGPT needs a little bit of work. It needs that human touch. Anyways, that's what Pan's Labyrinth is about. So I also asked if it involved Nazis because in my post I had like little key points as to why, like, or not key points, they were like not as to why I liked it, but they were key points of like takeaways, or like if you like these things or interested in these things, and like it's in the film. I wrote Nazis, and then I was reading that and I was like, there's no Nazis in this movie. And so I was like, wait, what? And so I asked Chat, and Chat said that Pan's Labyrinth does not directly involve Nazis, but it's set during the aftermath of the Spanish Civil War in 1944. So I guess that's like where I got that from, when Spain was under the fascist regime of Francisco Franco. I don't know why I said it like that. The antagonist of the film is a brutal military captain. Brutal. Let me just say, this movie is, it starts off bad. It starts off very bad, immediately bad. Gory. It shows stuff immediately. So, warning to gore in the beginning. While Nazis are not a part of the story, the film critiques similar ideologies of oppression and dehumanization for sure. Oh my God. So, first of all, I love anything that Guillermo del Toro has a hand in. That man is my icon, my little Mexican icon. He's not very little, but he's probably taller. I mean, obviously, he's taller than me, Emily. I'm 5'4". He is my little idol. I want a little candle of him to place on my bookshelf. I would love that actually. So obsessed with him. Obviously, I'm Mexican and my grandfather's from Spain, and I wanted nothing more than to be known as a little Spaniard girl when I was like a teenager for some reason. I don't know. Just probably the way that my mom talked about my grandpa, and I love everything that's European. So I just wanted to like not live here since I was a little kid and explore the world. And so like I just like really attached myself to that. I'm actually going to pull up my post right now. That's what I'm looking for if I Okay, so I went to my post and I just kept yapping. And I'm actually so sad right now because I didn't realize that when I opened this app, it would shut off my recording because I've been able to like open up Safari and other apps and it just kept recording. And so I had been yapping, yapping, yapping on, did not notice that it paused my recording and none of it got recorded. So what? I don't even remember like what all I said. I do remember that I was saying that in the post, I had like those little points of like, if you enjoy this, you may like this film or it touches on this or whatever. Also, I do want to say that it was lit up in the corner of my I'm recording with my phone. And so like it was lit up saying that it was recording. Okay, but whatever. Whatever. We're gonna leave that alone. And I'm just like so paranoid now that it's not recording, but it is. Okay, perfect. All right, so in the post I had written or I had like written, yeah, I had written, sorry. Nazis. And I was like, what? Hold up, there's no Nazis in this film. And so I looked it up. There's no Nazis. Or I asked Chat and Chat said, because I was like, I don't remember Nazis. Why did I write that?
And so I asked if it involved Nazis and said, Pan's Labyrinth does not directly involve Nazis, but it is set during the aftermath of the Spaniard Civil War. Sorry. AR is hard for me. Like we're in OAR and ORs are hard. I don't know. It's a thing. Okay. Civil War in 1944, when Spain was under the fascist regime of Francisco Franco. The antagonist of the film is a brutal military captain who embodies the cruelty and authoritarianism of the era. Paralleling the border themes of fascism seen in World War II, while Nazis are not part of the story, the film critiques similar ideologies of oppression and dehumanization. Heavy on that. In the very beginning, it's pretty brutal. It's pretty graphic in the beginning, and I ended up like watching this with my mom because my mom also likes fantasy. I think my dad is the one who got me into fantasy with his liking of the Lord of the Rings. I was gonna say obsession, but there was one time where I bought him the entire box set to Lord of the Rings. It was like 2012. And the entire box set was like probably $80, which for me in 2012 was like so much money. It's like my whole paycheck. And I bought it for him, and he was like, "Why would I want this?" And I was like, "Oh, okay. You were obsessed with it." And he's like, "Yeah, but like I can just watch it on TV when it's on." And then I was like, "All right. Never mind, broke my heart, but whatever, we're not gonna talk about that." All I've ever wanted in my life is for just a magical man, creature to come and tell me there's more to this world and then take me on quest and fly me away. So there's also the creatures in this movie. Holy shit, I love them. So there's the Faun, who is also the Pale Man. So the Faun is like this Faun. It's a mythical creature who comes to Ophelia and believes her to be this lost princess of another world. And he is the symbol, like he is like the, what is it? I want to he's the representative of the underworld. And so he's like believing her to be this lost princess. And he has her do all these ethical quests to pass, to not pass, to see how far, whatever. It's beautiful. And at one point, Ophelia is given this piece of magical chalk, and she draws this little door, as instructed by this book. And these little fairies pop out. Well, I mean, they don't pop out, but I mean, whatever. And I think like dark fantasy, Tinkerbell, like not Tinkerbell, but like dark fantasy, Tinkerbell. Oh my God, I fucking love them. I want them tattooed on me. That's like one thing that I've always wanted and thought, like, sometimes you get a like tattoo idea or you save a tattoo when you're a teenager. And you look back and you're like, oh, thank God I didn't do that. Not this one. I absolutely want these fairies in real life. I just want little fairies that don't speak and make little noises to guide me and tell me right from wrong, or at least tell me what they think and just hang out. And I'll make a little space for them on my bookshelf and they can hang out with my Guillermo del Toro candle. I don't know if I said that in this recording, but I think I did. Anyways, I just want someone to come and take me away and tell me that I'm a magical princess and here are my quest. Or I want a man in a blue box to come park outside and say, hop in, take me to a bunch of alien worlds where we save them. That's all I've ever wanted. Just some bat boys to come fly into my life and say, there's a magical fairy realm on the other side of this wall that you belong in. That's all I've ever wanted. Not too much to ask for, but for now, I'll just have my movies and my books. And that's fine. That's fine. Question: has anyone ever written a dark fantasy children's book? Wait, I actually think I have one on my shelf right now. I'm pretty sure I have one on my shelf right now. I'm pretty sure I have a few, actually. I should write a dark fantasy children's book. That would be epic. I think I'm gonna do that. I'm gonna figure out a way to do that. Wow, now I'm excited. It's this. Oh, I said Diet Coke earlier. It's not a Diet Coke. It's a Coke Zero. Big difference. Wow. I don't usually have any bit of caffeine after 5 p.m. 5 p.m. I'm feeling it. So the Pale Man and the Faun are the same character, actor, which, oh my God, I fucking love his voice. Actually, He's American. It's, oh my God, he's in Hellboy, he's in Splice. What is his name? Please don't yell it at me. I know you know it. Hold. Oh my God. I know that he learned Spanish for this film, and the way he speaks such perfect Spaniard Spanish, like Castilian Spanish, is so beautiful. He just sounds so poetic when he speaks because he's playing this character. He's a character actor. Like, he's so good at transforming himself into like a creature and not just like, you know, a different person. Come on. Doug Jones. We know Doug Jones. Everyone knows Doug Jones. He was also, oh my God. Oh my God, what's his name? Hold on. I'm blanking so hard right now. Billy Butcherson. Hocus Pocus. Same guy. I love this guy so much. He plays, he's just amazing. But anyways, the Pale Man. He's a horror creature. He is a monster in Pan's Labyrinth. The one with, you've probably seen this photo on like in Tumblr times before, but he has like the little eyeballs that he places on his hands. And so he, that's how he's able to see, you know, with his hands and the eyeballs on his hands. And then he's like running and he's all like skin on bones and he's freaky looking with the huge fingers. Terrifying. Intriguing, terrifying, disgusting. I love this movie so much. Ophelia do be pissing me off though. She's just a girl. She's just a girl. But fuck, sometimes she be making me really, really mad. Can't say I'd be any better though. Also, it hasn't happened yet. Yet. I'm still holding on that hope for some magical creature to come into my life and tell me to go on a quest. So I actually thought that the Pan's Labyrinth monster was the same as the monster in my next movie, but it's not the same actor. I think that I don't know. I think that I got mixed up because he's been in so many other like he's been so many other creatures in other movies, and that's what he does. My next movie, I haven't. I hope I didn't. I'm not like trying to give away too many spoilers because that thought that was fleeting in the beginning that I was like, oh, I don't know. I'm just gonna let that thought go. That thought was that I would like to, in future episodes, reiterate an entire movie for an episode and basically just like spoil the entire movie, like just word, not word for word, but like, you know, retell you the movie in podcast. There is a podcast that does that. I believe it's called Too Scary Didn't Watch or something like that. Too Scary Didn't Watch, something like Too Long Didn't Read. You can look it up. I'm sure that it's very popular and will pop up. But there's also a podcast called The Bad Broadcast. And every Halloween, she actually does this scary movie. She has a friend on who reiterates a scary movie that she watched because the host of the podcast is too scared, and so her friend who is not scared and loves horror movies reiterates the movie to her on the podcast. And so I was like, that would be a great idea for future episodes to just reiterate the entire plot of a movie that I like. And I just so happen to love scary movies, and so you know that could be a thing that I do. And there's also like I said earlier, movies that didn't make the cut just because like they were different categories other than scary, but they weren't like categories very similar to each other to where like I felt like I could throw them in. The only like significance that they had together was that they were movies that changed my life trajectory because they changed my thoughts, but they weren't really like, you know, the same genre. And so I was like, well, I'll just find different ways to subgenre those and then talk about those in future episodes. So we'll just make this one the scary one. So my next movie is Wreck. Wreck is the original Quarantine. So Wreck is what Quarantine is based off of. Both of these are set in Spain and in Spanish, by the way. Actually, I think most of these are in a different language, except for maybe one. Anyways, Wreck is a Spanish horror film that begins with TV reporter Angela, also one of the most beautiful women I've ever seen, and her cameraman Pablo. I wish I had a Pablo. Shadowing a fire station for a late night documentary, they respond to a seemingly routine emergency call at an apartment building, where the situation quickly spirals into chaos. The residents are infected by a mysterious and violent illness, trapping everyone inside, and authorities quarantine the building. The film unfolds entirely through the camera's lens, immersing the audience in the unfolding terror. Its mix of claustrophobic settings, intense action, and shocking revelations creates a gripping and terrifying experience known as its raw, realistic approach. Wreck is a landmark in found footage horror. Found footage horrors, oh my God, scares me so much. It's also one of my favorite subgenres of horror. That was the first, or sorry, the second summary I asked, because the first one I felt was like a little bit too vague. The first one chat had to say was Wreck 2007. It's a Spanish found footage horror film directed by, oh my God, I'm not going to say his name because it looks like Juan, but it has an M in it. Okay. Paco Plaza. I know Paco Plaza well. It follows a television reporter and her cameraman who are documenting the late night shift local fire station. Also, I said this in the very first episode, how I thought I would work a late night shift, like TV reporter job. And so like, obviously I just gravitated toward this movie because I could very easily see myself as that main character in this movie, just because I fucking wanted to do that and would love to do that still. Like, I would still love to be like a live reporter somewhere or a late night reporter. I'll go outside right now with my mic. No, I won't. It's freezing and it's actually like a freezing hazard warning thing on my phone right now. So I will not be doing that. I just keep thinking about how beautiful this lady is though. She is so pretty. I have seen four installments of this movie. I have seen every single one multiple times and every single TV interview that they've ever done and adaptation. Wreck also has a prequel. I'm thinking about quilts because I really want a quilt. So prequel comic book that was only released in Europe, maybe just Spain, I don't know, but it was only released abroad. And it gives backstory into the ailment that started the violent outburst in Wreck 1 and the continuing series. And oh my God, when I say check your trigger warnings, I mean, do not fucking read this, because I knew it was going to be bad. And I said I could handle it. And I read this comic book and I wish I didn't, because I want to unsee things. And it also, it's a prequel and also it literally like starts to go into the second Wreck at the same time as the prequel of Wreck 1. And it just jumps around a lot. And there were things that I wish I didn't know, because it's so sad. And it makes me sad. And that's really it. It's not like, and I could have like done without it. Like, I feel like it could have been, it's scary enough, you know. I just loved it so much that I wanted to learn everything about it, and I shouldn't have. It's scary enough, and it was good with what it was, and I just made myself sad by reading about the sad backstory of the infected. It is different from Quarantine. I'm actually going to ask chat for some specifics on that. Okay, so I went ahead and asked chat for the differences between Wreck 1 and Quarantine, because they are the same story. Quarantine is just the American adaptation. So let's see, besides cultural tone and atmosphere, obviously, mythology and explanation. So Wreck explains the origin of the outbreak through subtle clues in introducing a supernatural religious element tied to possession and exorcism. This adds unique layer to the horror. I didn't want to say that part because I feel like it's such a turning point in the movie that makes your jaw drop. But I feel like you would know anyways if you watched the trailer. So I'm just going to leave that in. Quarantine avoids the religious angle and focuses more on the scientific explanation, framing the outbreak as a virus or infection. Although in my mind, same thing, it's just the American version. But in my mind, it's like the same story. I can't switch it up. Like, I'm not like, oh, this is like a different telling. No, it's the same story. It's just in English. So in my mind, the outbreak is also the same. But it is terrifying. If you have like, if you can't like watch religious horror, then don't watch this. This is not for the faint of heart. This is a very scary movie, but I grew very fond of it. I love found footage scary movies, and I love Quarantine as well. It just didn't hit the same as watching Wreck, because obviously, like, the Spanish accent, the Spanish aspect, and I just feel so comforted in watching a movie in Spanish. I feel like I can take my bra off, you know what I mean? Like, I can like turn my brain off and tune in when I'm watching like something in Spanish and feel comfy, cozy, like I'm at home. Because obviously that was like the language spoken in my home. And so it just feels like very comforting, even though it is a scary movie. And also, like, I love scary movies. So like, it's just a different kind of comfort to me. I'm not saying like, it's like, I mean, it is though. It does touch a tug at your heartstrings. Like, it's like, it's not that I want to be so different. Like, I like love scary movies because they just invoke so much. You know, people like to be scared, but they also like to be challenged and thrilled, and it's just different. I don't know. It's a puzzle. There you go. It's a puzzle, and it's a puzzle of emotion. I love it. And I love watching things in Spanish because it literally is that feeling of like coming home and taking off your clothes and putting on your comfy clothes for me, but like mentally. So some other points that I had written down, I have to go to it. Oh my goodness, I almost dropped my phone. Zombies. Okay, so zombies are like one of my favorite horror tropes ever. I love, I think zombies are probably like my favorite. I love trolls as well, but I love zombies. Anything zombie movie, even if it's like a terrible, terrible movie, I'll just have to watch it because I'm a zombie gal. Found footage, it's a thriller, plot twist. Oh, and the way it was written, so the script is, it's amazing, and the acting's amazing. But in Wreck, they were given like the scene, the script for the scene right before they filmed. So like they would show up to film a certain scene that day, like for work, and then they were also handed the script to that scene that day of. So there wasn't like time to learn lines or prepare. The Paco, I don't actually sound so white saying that. Paco, whatever, Plaza. That was like his doing. Like, he really wanted them to kind of like react as the actor would be, or as the, like, you know, the TV reporter would, because it's all happening real time and everything's kind of just unfolding and it becomes very chaotic very quickly, and he wanted it to be very raw. And so there wasn't many lines, or there were lines, but like there was just like rough outlines, and they had an idea of kind of what was going on and what they had to say, but it was just like scene by scene. And I think they only filmed like just a few in a day, and so they were handed the script that day that they went in. One scene specifically, this isn't really like a big spoiler, but in one scene, a fireman is thrown from a balcony inside of the building, and the actors were not told about this because he wanted their raw reaction. So their reaction to the fireman falling like three stories, obviously it's not a real fireman or the real actor, it was a body, one of those fake dummy bodies, but in a fireman suit. But obviously, like, you know, they just hear a loud crash and see the suit come falling down. So that was real for them. And that was all like Buck was doing. He wanted that to be very fresh and very raw. And so that was really, really cool to learn about. Oh yeah, there's also an SNL-esque skit that the main characters from Rec 3. So Rec 3, during their press tour, the main female and male character reenacted Rec 1 on this Spanish late night show called El Hormiguero, I think. And they were like, he pulled out like, oh my God, like play. What am I thinking? Like theater play production set up, and they like reenacted it in a comedic way. And oh my God, it hit. It was so funny. And I have it saved on my YouTube. I think I downloaded it because I go back and watch it all the time. But the fact that it wasn't just like a scary zombie movie and unraveled so much, and this whole conspiracy, and it's a whole series. There's like 4 installments. I love this movie and the entire series so much. And I love Quarantine. I'm not a big fan of Quarantine 2. It has nothing to do with the rest of it. So I just like block it out in my mind. Okay, so I don't know if I should go into the next one. Okay, yeah, I'm just going to go into the next one that is the last one that's in Spanish. So all 3 of these are in Spanish. I actually used to host movie nights in junior high. And I remember my friends being like, we're going to watch it. Which, first of all, I hosted because I had a big TV. And second of all, my mom never let me go anywhere to anyone's house. And so like, if we wanted to have a movie night with me, I would have to host it because I wasn't allowed to go anywhere. So, but I remember I hosted quite often, and I had a friend say, yeah, no, that's fine. But like, can we maybe like not do a foreign film this time? Because I would pick a lot, or I would just like, my pick would always be a foreign film. And I just remember that like my friend very like, was like, no, like I have no, like, yeah, we can do it at your house again. But like, I don't want to read subtitles. I didn't know that I was that picky of a, yeah. Until then, I just hadn't realized. Okay, so my next movie is The Orphanage. Oh my God. The way that this movie makes me cry. It makes me sick to my stomach cry. So this isn't a Guillermo del Toro film, but I do think he was like the producer or something. Like he had a hand in it for sure. I mean, he's on like the cover of it, not his face or anything, but like his name. So I know he has ties to it. My man, love my man. So, oh my God, this movie, seriously upsetting. Seriously so sad. I have to ask chat for a summary. Okay, chat's back. The Orphanage is a Spanish gothic horror film. Again, with the dark horror. A gothic, oh my God, I was about to say the F word. I'm sorry. A horror film directed by J.A. Bayona. It tells the story of Laura. First of all, already interrupting myself, but Laura is one of my favorite, Laura, one of my favorite names of all time, but it is also one of my sister-in-law's sister names. And I don't know if I can name my kid that with some relative being so close. I don't know. Maybe I can if I have a girl or a middle name, but I already have a middle name picked out, so I don't know. But I fucking love that name. I want that name. Anyways, my character in my book. Perfect. That's what I'm going to do. If you can hear my stomach, I am so sorry. It will not stop growling. And it's just got Coke in it. So just digesting that Coke. The story of Laura, a woman who returns to the now abandoned orphanage where she grew up with plans to reopen it as a home for disabled children. She moves in with her husband and adopted son, Simon, who soon begins interacting with imaginary friends. Also, Simon, the way he also like finds out that he's adopted in a really cute way, because he gets like really mad and it's cute in a kid way. When Simon mysteriously disappears, Laura delves into the orphanage dark past, uncovering secrets, tied to the children who once lived there. The film is a blend of supernatural mystery and psychological drama. I just got the worst chills down my spine because the wind picked up and my entire house just shook. I am so sorry. Oh my God, I'm scaring myself. Okay. The film is a blend of supernatural mystery and psychological drama, exploring themes of motherhood, grief, and the enduring bond between parent and child. Huge trigger warning on those, okay? In emotional depth, The Orphanage is often praised for its ability to balance heart-wrenching drama with chilling suspense. It's less about jump scares and more about crafting a haunting, melancholic experience. Oh, perfect, chat. That was a perfect summarization. Also, I got really scared because my house and the wind. I have a lot of windows and sunroofs, and so that just, like, the wind really hit it. And again, I'm in a wind freeze advisory, and so I'm right next to my fireplace that is open to the outside. And so I just, I got the chills. I legit thought that my husband had opened a door and was standing there, but the door just rattled. Oh, okay. This movie, so sad. So sad. So scary, but also not scary because it's like there. I mean, the music does, it does have, like, I would say not like, it's not like jump scares like you would see in like Annabelle or the Conjuring movies. Those are a little cheap to me. But it has like a thriller type of jump scares. You know what I mean? Where you're just like, oh my God, get away, get away. Stuff like that. But it happens so quickly and you're just like, ah, like that. Laura, her courage as a mother. I mean, it's something that you don't realize is in you until you become a parent. And then it becomes apparent. But it is the what you would do for your child, the quest that you will go on for your child. Also, Simon is just her son, the most beautiful little boy. He's so cute. There's also another little boy, one of his imaginary friends, Thomas. I was dead set on naming my kid Thomas or Thomas. Like when I watched this movie as a teenager, I was like, that's, but then I married a Thomas, my husband's last name, my last name, Thomas. Okay. No, he's not a mariachi singer. That will not work out. I mean, if he was a mariachi singer, it would work out, but I'm not going to do that to him. Also, he doesn't exist because I named my son's other names, but I was like all so obsessed with that. Also, I dated a guy named Thomas. And so like, it just felt weird. I don't know, to like also then name my kid Thomas, and he was like Hispanic, so both name interpretations were there. I don't know. This movie is gut-wrenching. It is beautiful because of like the way that it was in the home, the orphanage that she bought. Gorgeous. Oh my God, I love it. And at one point, because she goes on these, like, she starts playing these games with these aren't like real spoilers. She starts playing these games with Simon's imaginary friends because they're kind of leaving her clues and she wants to find them. And so she's like, I want to find my son. I'm about to cry because I know what happens. But she wants to like, she wants to find her son. So she starts playing these imaginary games with these ghost imaginary children. And they're so sweet because they're just babies. They're just kids. And it's just so pretty. I don't know. There's a spooky lady in it that I don't like. But at one point she has to like return the orphanage into its original state with the older decor. And it's just so pretty. And it didn't, like, I just, my mom really integrated that in me and to just have this like really, like this deep love and fondness for like antique stuff. And so it just like didn't really scare me. It just made me like, if I had to move into an orphanage and pull out all the old orphan, and also Madeline, I mean, come on, living my Madeline dreams, except it's a horror movie, but I just, if I had to live in an orphanage and take out all of these like vintage antique furniture and children toys and stuff, I obsessed. I would do it 100%. I mean, I would not love the whole like, I would not love to be in that movie setting, but I would love to have an abandoned orphanage as my home. I would love that. There's this YouTube channel that my husband and I watch called Proper People. They just go through, there are these two guys who like study film and then they go to abandoned buildings, but they do their research on them and they just gather, like, they do it in a very like cinematic, beautiful way. And they sell prints on their website that we would love to buy. And they're like really cool dudes, but I just sometimes they go into these like old abandoned not castles, but I think they've maybe they've done a castle, but they're just like these old abandoned like mansions that are very, very old, and some detailing is like still, I don't know, 18th century, and I just, God, I want that so bad. Okay, so finally, my next movie is not in Spanish, but it is also not in English. It is in Norwegian. And if you know me, you know that I love Norway. And zombies. This movie is called Dead Snow, or I was going to try to pronounce it. Okay, maybe I'll still try. Dead Snow in Norwegian. Because it has the O with the mark through it, which is like an EU, so it would be like, I don't know. Ugh, I'm not gonna pronounce it. Should I try? No, I'm not, because I'm tired. I'm taking the way out. I'm sorry. Taking the tired way out. Dead Snow. Dodd Snow. Just kidding. It's not Dodd. It's Did. Dodd. Did. Snow. 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 That is definitely not it. Oh my God. Okay, I'm so sorry. So sorry to all Norwegians. I'm so sorry. Please let me in your country. Dead Snow 2009 is a Norwegian horror comedy that combines classic zombie tropes with dark humor. Again, the dark humor, the dark fantasy, the gothic. Okay, I'm so sorry. I lost my place. With dark humor and a unique twist. The film follows a group of medical students who retreat to a remote cabin in the snowy Norwegian mountains for a vacation. Their trip takes a horrifying turn when they inadvertently disturb a cache of Nazi gold, awakening a battalion of undead Nazi soldiers who seek to reclaim their treasure. The movie is known for its blend of gory action, over-the-top violence, and absurd humor. Very absurd. I love this movie. Offering a tongue-in-cheek homage to both zombie and war films. Themes of greed and survival are woven into the chaos, and the snowy landscape provides a chilling, beautiful, yet isolating backdrop. Dead Snow has become a cult classic for fans of splatter horror and campy entertainment, delivering a unique mix of scares and laughs. This movie's hilarious. I love this movie. So again, Norway, it's beautiful. And also, like, it is gory, but not gory in a emotional invoking kind of way. Like, oh my God, Pan's Labyrinth is. Because Pan's Labyrinth, like, the type of gore just makes your heart hurt. Like, you just want it to stop and you wish you didn't see it. But in Dead Snow, it's just kind of like, I mean, they're zombies, they're undead, and it's funny gore, you know? So, like, it's more like icky. It's more like putting your hand in the spaghetti and pretending it's guts, you know? But it's a good one. It's a good one. It's a good movie. But I made Ryan watch this like 100 times when we started dating, because when we started dating, I was going through like a sad period. And something, I'll just say it, it's not, I lost my dad had, I didn't lose my dad, sorry. The way I said that, I'm so sorry. I didn't lose my dad. My dad left the gate open and my dogs got out. And I got them both back, and I ended up finding one myself who unfortunately did not make it. So sorry, it's like very sad, but I was very sad. And it was this one of my comfort movies, and so I just like Ryan came over and I was just watching it. And because I was like mad at my dad and my mom, I was like not talking to anyone. And my mom like hated for me to watch horror movies in at her house. And so what I did as my act of rebellion was go into the main living area of our home and put on my very gory Norwegian horror film and not talk to anyone and put it on like full blast because that was my little rebellion act and also made me happy. And so I just wanted to do that. But I remember Ryan came over and he walked in and he obviously knew what was going on. And he sat on the couch next to me and he didn't say a word. And we watched the entire movie in silence. And then we rewatched it. Not silence, honestly. We were watching the entire movie and then we laughed because this movie's hilarious. And that's what I needed. And then we watched this movie endlessly for like the following few weeks because it's just my comfort movie. It's funny. Gory, Nazis, Norway, and World War II, because again, I had this weird like obsession as a kid about it. And so, I mean, every kid has that, right? Like every thought daughter has like a historical era where they become obsessed with stuff like that. I'm sure. I know I'm not the only one. Also, Dead Snow 2. That's not on my list, but it's not like it didn't make like the top list of like movies that have altered my brain chemistry, but it is very different and very good. First of all, Dead Snow is in Norwegian. Dead Snow 2 is in English and has American actors in it. It actually has my boy from, oh my God, nope, hold on. I'm gonna have to look it up because I don't know anything he's in suddenly. Dead Snow 2. Red versus Dead, Dead Snow 2. That's what it's called. Martin Starr. It has Martin Starr in it as Daniel. Martin Starr also in Freaks and Geeks and Silicon Valley. So he's in it. And I remember just being like, oh my God, what? Hilarious. This movie is hilarious. Okay. The second movie, more funny. I think you can watch it as a standalone, but it would make more sense if you had watched the first one first, because obviously like the zombies had to come from somewhere and there's like references to the first one and the character from the first one in here, but it is I mean, maybe watch the first one first, but also like you can watch it as a standalone. I believe very good movies. First one obviously means more to me, but it's that's my last movie in another language. Okay, so now this is my last movie, I believe. Before, what is this video? Oh, it's a video I accidentally took of my feet. Oh no, Mika's feet. Okay, Mika had my phone. I've got the chills. I've got the chills from the orphanage. I freaked myself out. All right, so last movie, saving the best, very best for last. Well, maybe not the very best. I don't know. I love a lot of these movies. But okay, my last movie is Paranormal Activity. Again, a found footage movie. I love found footage. I love it. It feels like a vlog in a weird way. It feels like a home video. I don't know. Get ready with me. Spend a day with me as a with an entity attached to me. I'd watch that. Get ready with me to go to my sister's house where a cult was put onto us as children. So anyways, okay, so Paranormal Activity. Oh, I didn't ask chat. I'm sure you've seen it. I'm sure many, many of you have already seen it. Very popular film. I love it so much. Sorry, hold on. Can you summarize? Can you summarize? Paranormal Activity, 2007. Again, a lot of these films or books or stuff that have happened, music, have been like circa 2007, 2008 for me. And I just, that's just a pivotal time in my life, I guess. Makes sense. It makes sense that I would have like held on to a bunch of these things that happened at that time period. Paranormal Activity 2007 is a found footage horror film that tells the story of a young couple, Katie and, wait for it, Mika, who experience disturbing events in their home. To understand what's happening, Mika sets up a video camera to record their bedroom while they sleep. Terrible idea, Mika. Capturing increasingly unsettling paranormal phenomena. The film is minimalist in its approach, relying on subtle scares, tension, and the power of suggestion rather than the gore or elaborate effects. The haunting intensifies as Katie reveals a past connection to supernatural occurrences, and the couple's relationship is strained by fear and Mika's insistence on confronting the entity. Paranormal Activity explores the theme of vulnerability, control, and the unseen forces that lurk in everyday life. It became a cultural phenomenon praised for its innovative storytelling and ability to deliver genuine terror on a modest budget. It successfully spawned a franchise of sequels and prequels, expanding to the lore of the paranormal universe. The best universe. Seriously. I mean, like, as far as like, okay. Conjuring universe, not my thing. Paranormal Activity universe, my thing. So there is like a random one in the middle that has it's like set in, you know, LA in a Mexican neighborhood, and it's like funny, it's scary funny, but very, very scary, but funny in a Mexican way, if that made, like, Mexican comedy is just different. I don't know, man. It still hits. It's so funny. It's so relatable in like the humor. And it's so, so terrifying. Like, these are movies where I can only watch, I think it's Paranormal Activity 4 or 3. I think it's 3. The one with the girl and the boy. Okay, that gave like no context. Hold on. I'll look up the actress's name because she's in, and the actor, he's in a few things. Let me see. Not Paranorman. No, it's not Paranormal Activity 3. It must be Paranormal Activity 4 then. Yeah, okay, so Paranormal Activity 4 with Catherine Newton. Sorry, Catherine Newton. What is, oh, she's in Freaky. That's my husband and I recently, like, well, not recently. It came out in 2020, but we loved it. I love that movie so much. And Blockers. She's also in Detective Pikachu. I did watch that. Abigail, haven't seen that yet. And Lisa Frankenstein. I think she became a little bit of a scream queen. Scream queen. But Paranormal Activity 4, I can watch alone and not be afraid. It's like a comfort movie. I mean, these are all my comfort movies, but it's just like one that doesn't feel scary to me. And it has Matt Shively. What do I know him from? I feel like he was on Disney Channel or something. Maybe not. I don't know, but he is in Paranormal Activity 4. That one I can watch just like and not be afraid. Paranormal Activity 1, 2. I mean, 1 as well. Paranormal Activity 5? I don't know. The one that's set in LA, that one does scare me. Like, there's some parts where they go in dark places that I wouldn't want to go. I'm kind of freaking myself out talking about all this, but only because it's at night. But again, Paranormal Activity 1, comfort movie. I just love the found footage aspect. And also in Paranormal Activity 1, what they did was like, they didn't really give lines. They just kind of gave, oh, and they used the real actors' names, which I thought was cool. So Katie's actually named Katie. She's from Texas. And Mika is actually named Mika. And yes, my son, Mika, is named after Mika from Paranormal Activity. This is my movie. Okay. But they were given like the not they were given like an outline of the scenes, but they weren't given scripts. So a lot of I think they may have some words, or he told them like somewhat of what he wanted them to like say. But a lot of this is just them talking to each other and just them hanging out, which is it's I mean, the casting for that had to be so fucking good. And they still do a lot of like the two characters, Katie and Mika, they still do a lot of like horror con conventions and stuff. But the chemistry, you just know that had to be so spot on in order to like be able to riff and also scare an audience genuinely. It's just written, it's just such a good movie. Like, it's not even about like being spooky or scared. It's just such a good movie. A classic, truly. One of my favorites. And the entire, I'm trying to like think if I had to put Wreck in the series and Paranormal Activity, I think I would choose Wreck just because the time period that I watched it in, I don't know. I think Wreck means more to me, but I didn't name my kid Pablo. Pablo was the cameraman in Wreck, or is the cameraman in Wreck. I guess you have to watch it to find out. Those are my movies, my comfort movies. Those are the movies that formed my brain and my heart and my butt. I'm just kidding. It's late and I'm sleepy and I've only had Coke for dinner, so I should probably eat something before going to bed, but I also have to edit. Well, I can eat and edit. I make the rules. I'm the adult. Okay. That was this episode of When the Kids Go Down. I hope you enjoyed it. I hope you enjoyed some of my rambling. I cringed myself out in the last episode when I said that I've always been a little bit of an influential person. But then at the same time, I said, you know what? Fuck it. Who cares if I cringe myself out? I know who I am and it does not matter. Like, I was like, oh my God, I'm coming across like as super out of touch or pretentious or wannabe, whatever. And then I realized that I've said those words to myself quite literally since I was like 4 years old and learning to skateboard with my brother and was so terrified that other kids were going to call me a poser. And then guess what? I went to a skate park and I was like, everyone was like, oh my God, you're a little girl to my dad is so cool. And I was like, I can't skate for shit. And I was wearing my little fake Avril Lavigne tie that was my dad's tie and trying to skateboard and not trip over my tie and wear my stupid, what are they called? Pads, my knee pads and elbow pads and helmet that I didn't want to wear. But I was also like a child, and so my dad made me wear them. And everyone just thought I was the coolest. And a boy was like very much trying to initiate a relationship with me. And my dad thought it was cute. And so he was not protecting me at all. And I was like terrified of the opposite sex. So he did not read the room. And I made that boy, I hurt his feelings, and my dad made me go apologize to him because, first of all, if you're not going to protect me, I will. Second of all, I had to go apologize to him. And then I felt really bad because I made him sad. And he was older than me. And I thought people who are older than you are stronger than you because my brother is older than me and he was stronger than me, physically and emotionally. And so I just thought everyone was like him. And apparently, that was not the case. Anyways, all this rambling to say if I cringe myself out, I cringe myself out. But in the end, it doesn't really fucking matter. I hope you have a great Thursday or whenever. Oh, happy Thanksgiving. I hope you have a great day. I hope you have a great week. And I hope you enjoyed this. I will see you back next week. Thank you. And I love you.